Dave Wilbur, Peter McCormick, tag teaming on life, health, and turf, unscripted.
Welcome to round number seven. Wilbur and McCormick, tag team unscripted. There are three of us today.
Special guest.
There he is. And what's the little guy's name?
This is Walter, namesake after Walter Woods, the incredible, amazing mentor of mine and was at St. Andrews forever. And I was lucky to have Walter be an unofficial uncle. So this is Walter.
We'll see how that goes. You got him just a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah, he's 2 days with me. This is starting into day number two. And he's doing great. He really is. He's a rock star.
You've got two other dogs still, correct?
Yeah. So the other dogs love him. Everybody's getting along good. He holds his own with the bigger dogs, right? The German Shepherd's a little scared of him. And which is good, right? So what is that thing?
Any idea of breed?
He's essentially two-thirds Chinese Sharpei, one-third Australian Cattle Dog, and one-third American Staffordshire Terrier, pit bull.
That adds up to four-thirds, but we're not going to split hairs.
Okay. Then I've got it wrong. Anyway, one-third, one-third, one-third.
All right. We're not going to sweat the math. Yeah, my new puppy is due. He's not really a puppy. He's going to be 7 months old by the time he gets here, but he should be here on January 4th. We've got to drive down to Seabrook, New Hampshire to pick him up. That's about a 6-hour round trip. So how are you doing? This is kind of a holiday edition, I guess, right?
This is a holiday edition. Hey, I'm doing great. Obviously my time has been filled up with this thing.
Yeah.
So, this is the glimmer and, I think about people with kids, man, like this has been 24/7 for me for a bit here and it's a lot. So, I'm trying to wash the dishes with one hand while I've got him in the other and, slowly we're getting him crate trained. So in the next few days, he'll be good with the crate. We've had no house accidents, but he doesn't have a lot of, my method with this, with puppies is to keep their world small.
Yeah.
Right. So they don't have any hassles. And, hi, Megs. Thank you. Yeah. That's a good girl. Keep their world small and,
keep them contained geographically, I'm guessing also, right?
Yeah. So I've got kind of a playpen kind of thing, that he can be in a small crate. He's with me, as much as possible. And then, when he's on his 4 feet, he's on a 10-foot leash, right? Even in the house.
Really?
And yeah. And that way, we're just not going to have, he doesn't have the opportunity to have a screw up and,
right,
neither do I, right? Where'd he go, right? Because he's small, man. He gets under stuff and really quickly, right? So yeah,
I love the folds on his back there.
Oh, I know. Look, check this out. Look at all the skin, man. Look at all the skin. Look, and he's even got folds in his tail. I don't know if the camera's going to get that, but he's got like look at the skin. So that's the Sharpei part.
I guess our podcast listeners will have to check out the video to get the full effect of this.
Let's just say he's got handfuls of loose skin. So, yeah.
He's a cool looking dog. I'm happy.
He's a good dog. He's what I want. He's super mellow and, he's smart, but he's not trigger happy.
Yeah.
And, I met a couple of his brothers and sisters that were more cattle dog influenced, with their ears sticking up and a little bit more bright and aware. And it's like, I grew up with cattle dogs, so I don't want to deal with that. Right. It's a lot of energy. And,
that's another breed that you don't see very often here on the East Coast.
Probably not, huh?
Well, the woman who's fostering our inbound Kobe sent us a video the other day that she took very randomly and casually. She took the dog apparently her mother is on it or is in an assisted living situation. Okay. And she took the dog there, obviously on a leash, but let him loose, let the leash loose. And this video was Kobe going around and visiting with the other residents.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, sort of like like a therapy dog would. And the dog was super cool, super mellow, you know, no jumping up on people and just, you know, taking in all the pets and all the love and all that stuff. And so I'm relieved to see that.
Yeah.
So that we don't get a nutcase on our hands here, as some dogs can be. But I'm also really psyched for getting this dog because this is about mental health, right?
Right.
It sure is. And all that stuff. Well, I don't want to throw a wet blanket on this, man, but I've had a tough, tough time.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
The last couple weeks. You know, when we had to put Frosty down, that was very difficult. Christ, I didn't stop crying for 10 days.
Right.
I mean, you think here I am, a 70 years old and I'm crying about a freaking dog, but.
Well, it happens. It's reality.
But unfortunately, right? That also would, having a background or history of depression that I had pretty much in hand and under control.
Right.
That just let loose the cavalcade of all of the shit.
Yeah.
It manifested itself a lot in anger, which never used to.
Right.
Sometimes irrational. My poor wife was the brunt a couple of times. She didn't deserve she didn't deserve that. But it's weird in that, all of a sudden, some of the physical stuff is back to my shoulders. You get these knots up here in your shoulder blades, and my knees have started to hurt again, and that's all, it's all been the last couple weeks or so.
Right.
So,
right.
What I've been trying to do is, what I did do is jacked my meds back up.
There you go.
Yeah. Thankfully, I had somehow or another, I got an extra 90-day supply somehow or another. So, it took me a long time to whittle it down to what it was. So I just went from a 150 to a 300, and we'll let that ride, because a lot of people, this is a tough time of year.
Yeah.
For sure. The short day lengths.
Yep.
And thankfully we're right at the bottom right now, I guess. What is today? The 20th. So today or tomorrow is the shortest day of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the holidays are a problem for a lot of people. Not so much for me, other than, I view a certain amount of that stuff as a pain in the ass. Like, putting up Christmas trees. I hate doing that. And right. We used to have three of them, three live ones.
Really?
I got, one outside on the porch, one in the living room, one down in the cave. A couple of years ago, we got an artificial one for outdoors, and it's wonderful. You fold it up, it's pre-lighted. We put these red bows on there.
Lights are already on it. Yeah,
done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with these other two, and it was weird because we go to this tree farm the other side of Middlebury, and they always have a good selection. You can go out and cut your own, or you can just select from whatever they've got, because they have a couple other farms or fields elsewhere that they harvest themselves and bring in. So we go there maybe 2 weeks ago, and there's one tree there, Charlie Brown's. What the hell is this? So I said, do we miss something or do you guys close up or what?
Right.
Apparently 2 years ago, we had an extremely wet summer. We had like 20 inches of rain in July.
Okay.
And this is old lake bottom here. So it's a lot of clay and they lost about half their crop.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Lost.
Yeah. And you just don't snap your fingers and regrow Christmas trees. Christmas
trees. No, not at all. Know? Yeah.
So we ended up going somewhere else and getting a couple that would not have made the cut a few years ago. But when you're, when it's any port in a storm.
Right.
So in any case, I go to set these things up and I still had three stands.
Okay.
And one of them, it turns out, was kind of hidden under all of the other Christmas stuff we've got downstairs. So I grabbed two stands, didn't think about it. All right, this one looks like the better one. I'll put that up in the living room, put that up, bing, bang, boom. Take the other one, which is a little on the substandard size or the quality, and put that on the tree down in the cave. And that was falling over, and I had to get like pieces of wood and wedge it down in this thing to get this thing standing upright. And I'm just getting pissed off, you know? So I finally get the thing up. Patty goes to put water in it, and the water rushes out the bottom of this thing. Like, are you crazy? What is this? Okay, and this is a Sunday afternoon, like a week and a half until Christmas. Where in the hell am I going to find another tree stand? And I went online and looked around, and apparently the new ones, we got new technology here now.
Really?
The ones I have like a foot pedal that's a clutch, and then you can adjust the fore and aft and around, straighten it up, you know, and then release the clutch and you're done.
Right.
So these new ones have a cable that goes around that cinches up these spiky things that step on this pedal that's like a ratchet. It tightens up this cable. So, all right, I went down, you know, drove a half an hour to the hardware store down here and picked up one of these for $110 and bring it back. And it was okay. I mean, it's fine. And one of the benefits of it is that it's only like 4 inches high instead of 10 inches high.
Oh, okay.
So sure. If you don't have to cut as much off the bottom of the tree and shit.
Right. Yeah.
So these are the trials and tribulations of pre-holiday stuff. And when you're not in a good mood, you know, for better or for worse.
This just reminds me, one of my neighbors was putting up his lights, you know, and he does nice lights every year, but he's just outside, he's out there cussing up a blue streak, you know?
We don't do that anymore.
I was like, is this fun for you? Yeah, it's great. Really? Because it sounds like you're about to shoot somebody, you know.
Well, of course, the day that it turns out, back when I used to put lights on trees and stuff outside, you know, the day that it would come around that was the day that this was going to happen was always, you know, 10 below zero.
Right.
You know, you got your hands and your hands are raw and the spruce needles are chewing them up, and it's just
like blowing out the irrigation system on the worst day weather.
Yeah, just miserable. So,
yeah,
I may order another one of these things, but the weird thing was that after all this was said and done with these stupid Christmas tree stands, I find the other one. I said, "Where the hell is the other one down there?" Because I realized that the best of the three was not there. So I find it hiding around the corner. I'm thinking, are you kidding? But I may order another one of these for next year. We'll go all cable.
Right.
All cable system.
Cable system for the win.
That's it. Yeah. We'll get into the 21st century on the tree stands.
Ah, that's good.
The crap we have to deal with, huh?
Right. Jesus. I know. Just to celebrate.
Yeah. Well, it's smooth sailing now since all that's done. It's snowing outside now, which is kind of nice. What is today? Friday afternoon. So,
well, that's good. You'll have white Christmas.
I don't know.
I haven't looked at the weather forecast here. I don't know what it's going to do. It's cold and clear.
Yeah, well, our weather's like a yo-yo temperature-wise. You know, it'll be cold and snowy, and then 2 days later, it's 50 degrees.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of like it is here. So what's going on in the turf industry for you? What are you hearing? What's the word in the streets?
Well, automation, I think, is what I'm hearing about. I see Toro is now promoting their
the announcement. Yeah.
Yeah. The their fairway mower that I'm sure that was accelerated somewhat by the Firefly automatics or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Nothing really daring in terms of design. It's kind of the, it's kind of the same old fairway mower. I don't know whether, is that a fiveplex or a triplex?
Yeah, I think I saw pictures of both. It seemed like it was a five gang that was the most recent one, but the,
Come on in, the water's warm,
The interesting idea, and I think the thing that's going to play out, and I don't know the answer to this, is, is it because on the Toro thing, an operator can run it, right? And on the Firefly, there is no space for an operator.
Yeah, do they have like a handheld remote or something?
There's a remote and stuff, but you can't ride on it, can't drive it from, you're gonna drive it like a remote control car kind of thing or whatever. I don't want to super simplify it, but and the Toro thing, an operator could ride it or, from place to place or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know what the best
move we got to get these guys, at least Firefly. Toro's probably not going to come on. They don't like me anymore, but I'd like to get the Firefly guy. I would think at the very minimum, they could put a stand on, like a flip down stand on platform in the back.
Like a sulky kind of thing or something. Yeah.
Or attached, like those stand on mowers that they've got.
Yeah.
Maybe. I would think they could put something like that.
I don't know.
I guess the backlog on delivery of equipment is starting to loosen up.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. I see on Twitter some of these pictures of I don't know who it was, Smith Turf or somebody. There was a truck and trailer that had I don't know whether they were triplexes, fiveplexes, whatever they were. And being a smart ass that I am, once in a while, I just made a comment on there. Said, Jesus, that's like $1 million worth of equipment on that. Oh,
Jesus. that's kind of true, though, huh?
Well, it's not that far off, because I guess what these robotic fairway mowers are, what, a buck and a half each or something, like 160 or something?
Yeah. I don't know the exact number or what the feature spec is or isn't, real size and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, no, it's, that's one of the things that, not to do a turf rad plug here, but just for a quick,
I was going to ask you,
but we talk about a lot in our R&D type meetings about what cost is a big thing for everybody. And it's like, are we doing all the right things to keep costs down? And, we're really being conscious about things like server time and, software as an added service is kind of a thing, right? But it's like, we're really trying to calculate down to the numbers what that really looks like instead of just aiming, at something, right? And it's like, how much data do we really have to crush? And then, same thing with the hardware, keeping that cost right. And, the guys were telling me today that, a couple of different manufacturing options for a new thing that we're working on. one of them is five times more. That is not in Asia, right? I'll leave it at that.
And five times more what? Data or money?
Five times more money to make this piece of hardware.
Oh.
And it's just a smallish piece of hardware. It's an antenna kind of thing. But it's five times cheaper in China. than it is in to get it in Europe or in the States. And it's like, it's hard, you know, you're trying to be cost conscious. There it is.
Well, right? wait till the
tariffs.
Yeah, wait till the tariffs kick.
Well, I think we know our way around that one a little bit. And I think tariff is it's become a scare word, you know.
Well, because half of the government, half of those people that are spraying that word around don't understand how tariffs work.
No, so not at all.
Maybe they ought to get a grip on that first and then start talking about it. But
yeah.
In any case.
Yeah, in different places around the world that I travel, you know, tariffs on vehicles and things like that, you know, whether it's an American brand, a Japanese brand or whatever, but if you're in another country, you know, there's an import tax and all those sorts of things, but it's based on, you know, is there trade going both ways? And if there's not trade going both ways, then it kind of makes sense. It kind of has to make sense. So that's, I think, the thing that people don't understand is it's a thing to say, hey, we'll buy your product, but you got to buy ours. You know, and if you're not, then we're going to offset that imbalance. That's kind of the deal. So it's a little more complicated than people are making it out to just be a tax. It's not just that. So
I saw somewhere that you're speaking.
Oh, yeah. I got invited to speak at the Northern California, the Sierra Nevada Superintendents Association puts it on, but it's like all of NorCal is invited to, the equipment tech seminar that they do every year. This is the 10th annual one. And I spoke at the very first one. And I'm speaking at this one. So it's kind of cool. And talking about what all this new technology that we've been talking about, how it's going to impact the equipment manager. And what I've learned, you know, in the last number of months working with, mounting brackets and low voltage systems and satellite GPS, all that sort of stuff. It's, you know, it's going to be commonplace talk, right? So that's what I'm going to talk on. I'm super excited about it, really.
It's always good to get out, as difficult as it is sometimes to force yourself to do it. Every time I do, I'm glad I did after the fact.
Right. Right. Even though you have more travel hassles than anybody I've ever met. So
I did.
Yeah, you don't anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Past tense. I don't have any anymore. Talk about equipment managers a little bit. I am constantly and continually impressed by, they're climbing up the status ranks. And when a lot of them, it's guys pulling themselves up and pulling each other up.
Pulling each other up, as I see a lot of that. Yeah. Well, I mean, a good story. I was really fortunate to have, during the time that I was the superintendent, I had, good mechanics, right? And, three really good ones. One of them was exceptional. He worked on race cars on the weekend and all that sort of stuff. And he was a little tough to deal with, because he was such an introvert, but his wrench skills were off the chain. He could make anything, he'd do anything. And my reels were perfect. And he just was amazing. And I remember having a discussion with one of my assistants, and he was talking about, he was asking me why I was fretting over this guy. This guy wanted to take a summer vacation with his family, right? And he was owed that, my mechanic. Like, he had, teenage kids and they wanted to go somewhere. And it's like, okay, we got to figure this out. And of course, the week that he asked for was, was like a tournament week of some invitational, whatever. And I was like, oh, shit, this is not the time. So we kind of negotiated through that. But my assistant said to me, he said, why are you coddling this guy so much? Right. And I was having kind of one of those days. And I said, I'll tell you something. If you're gone for a week, it doesn't matter. I can handle it. If he's gone for a week, neither one of you or I can handle it.
Ooh.
So get over yourself. Okay.
Ouch.
Yeah. No. Ouch. But it's true, right? It's like,
no doubt.
The guy was so good. And tournament week, something's going to go wrong. I'm glad to see equipment managers getting you know, a better title than mechanic. And I'm bad. I use mechanic all the time and I should be using equipment manager. But, you know, over the years, I've seen some people really elevate the equipment manager to more of an assistant superintendent type status, right? You know, they're responsible for everything that goes on around the shop.
They should be consultative, you know, out Absolutely. On the course as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Getting them out on the golf course. And one of my guys loved to be out on the golf course. The other one hated it. You know, like, hey, come out and look at this mower. Do that, you know.
Yeah.
He acted like I was
out of his comfort realm, I guess.
Well, you know, whatever. But I just think that, you know, now with how important PP&E is and, you know, regulation, safety, all those sorts of things, you know, this is the stuff that equipment managers need to be able to have under their belt for superintendents and assistants and, you know, operations to work right. So, you know, I love seeing how this is all going. I love seeing, you know, education, certification, you know, that's why I said yes immediately to
awesome
to the speaking gig, you know, it's like, cause they're just the most important thing sometimes. And anybody who says they're not is missing the point, you know?
One of the other things that is concurrent or parallel to that, in terms of operations in the shop or the turf care center.
Yeah.
Is the upgrading of those facilities.
Right. Right. You know, absolutely.
Even the old ones, you know, where the guys are, they're moving all the crap out and they're sweeping it out and hosing it out and putting new epoxy floors down with the little sprinkles on them and making them look good.
Yeah, the Hector innovation thing.
New LED lighting and better ventilation. Because that makes such a tremendous difference in how every employee feels about going to
Absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think Hector started a lot of that stuff with the
makeovers. Very much on the leading edge because I think he showed a lot of people that you didn't have to spend a ton of money to take a facility that, you know, was struggling a little bit and get it on its feet. Right.
Yeah.
Just a matter of knowing what to do and what to do it with. So I love that.
It's awesome.
And I would say that to my guys all the time. It's like, listen, if we don't give the shop, the break room, the offices, the bathrooms, nice. What can we expect ourselves to do on the golf course? You know, like we have to carry our standard through our whole facility, right?
You know, as an old sales guy making the rounds, I went into a lot of restrooms. Some of them, I didn't want to touch anything. I didn't even to breathe.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and thankfully that's done. I remember a little anecdote about this was a good golf course on Long Island, New York. I don't think there are any bad golf courses on Long Island, but in any case, this was not super upper tier, but it was not lower tier either. So middle of the road. In any case, the superintendent had been there forever, you know, 30, 35 years, whatever. And
yeah.
I don't know whether he retired. I don't remember whether he retired or finally got sent down the road, but new guy came in from the Midwest and literally had to bring in skid steers to shovel all of the crap that had accumulated.
Yeah.
They had stacks of old tires.
Yeah, inside, the old tire stack
inside
is a thing,
the maintenance
right?
facility that had squirrels' nests and shit.
Right. Yeah.
Now, how do you let that get to that point?
I don't know.
You know,
I've seen it a lot, and I've seen it in some places where you wouldn't expect it would get led to that point.
To me, that's taking your eye off the ball, and if you're taking your eye off the ball there, you're just walking, wandering through life, and you're not taking care of the golf course either, I wouldn't think.
I have a picture of an old Jacobson F10 that is stuck in a berry bush kind of thing, right, and all grown over and everything, and it's like, what is this even doing here? Like, why is this here? I use it a lot to
the boneyard,
you know, and then we wonder why the powers that be sometimes don't want to cut loose with some money, you know, when they see stuff like that. So And when I asked the superintendent about that, he says, well, I don't know what to do with it. And we were thinking we might do something with it. And it's like, dude, it's got 15 years of the berry bush growth on it. I don't think you're going to do anything with it. You know,
there's not a yeah. lot of market for, you know, to part the thing out.
Well, right. Exactly. It's like one of those pieces of machinery that, you know, that, you know, we don't do that anymore. We don't use that anymore. Right. So yeah. things like that. On the other side of the coin, you know, the resurgence of like the five gang or the seven gang, you know, pull behind that happened in a lot of places.
I've seen some of that. More warm season.
More warm season and more in the new style architecture thing. And it's like guys are like, I'm glad we didn't get rid of that. Well, I, you know, that makes sense to me. But the F10, the Parkmaster, the old one, you know, I don't know. It's probably not a useful piece of equipment anymore.
I always thought I never liked the Parkmaster at all. Because you were dragging the reels behind, you know, behind.
Instead of pushing them?
Hmm?
Instead of pushing the reels, you were dragging the reels.
Pulling them, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first got in the business, one of the first courses that I visited, I didn't, you know, with the salesman, was Baltusrol.
Okay.
Joe Flaherty was the superintendent. Great guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All F10s on the fairways.
Okay.
Yeah. F10s on the fairways. And I think he fertilized with a once annual Milorganite wall to wall.
Right. Yeah.
Which, yeah. Hey, you know.
Sure.
But time marched on, and you know that it wasn't too long after that that they went with the, you know, the lightweights, which were, this would have been late 80s
when all that was changing over. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I got to the Lake Wildwood Club, we had an old HF-15, and that's what they mowed fairways with. And that thing was loud and ugly, and, you know, it just was a – and you could see the HF-15 tracks in the fairways from the compaction.
Well, now, right? If I recall correctly, I'm, you know, I'm really digging into the archives, the right? mental archives here, but an HF-15 would have been hydraulic drive.
Hydraulic drive.
15 yeah. foot width.
Yep.
Hydraulic drive reels.
Yep.
Whereas the F10 and the
Parkmaster were all ground driven. Yeah. Yeah. And the HF15, yeah, seven reels, yeah. right, on that thing. Yeah. And it would burn so much fuel, Peter, you know, and it just was, it was loud and ugly. And like I say, you could see the compaction marks in it from where, you know, from where they had been turning for years. I'm like, we got to get rid of this thing. And, you know, we went to a couple of Toro 223s, right? And it would take the guy all day to mow fairways, and he'd get caught by play all the time. And it just drove me bananas. So, you know, we got two or three 223s, and,
which was Toro's first lightweight.
Five gang, you know, five reel unit.
That was chasing the Jacobson LF 100.
Yeah. And man, we went out and, you know, we get fairways mowed in 3 hours, you know, with those units.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, it was an extra guy. And I had to kind of, you know, I had to kind of explain that to everybody. It's, yeah, I know that's two operators and stuff, but we're done, you know, and in a reasonable amount of time. Golfers are never going to see a fairway mower. I mean, it just was, you know, it was great. And the guys loved them, and it was quiet, and, you know, regular hearing protection was, you know, was good.
Moving from turf onto other important items,
life important things
like pizza.
Like pizza. Oh, yeah.
Okay. No, seriously. Last night, okay, just to set the stage. It would have been almost 2 years ago. My daughters gave me an Uni pizza oven as a Father's Day gift. And this was either wood or charcoal fired, and there was an optional gas or propane conversion that they gave me also. But I figured, it being a purist, let's go with the wood and all that. It was a little bit of a pain in the neck to get right. it up to temp, because these, you know, these ovens, which are outdoor ovens, although they do have new indoor ones, but you know, that you want to get them up close to 900 degrees.
That's right.
That
That's
takes really a while.
Yeah.
But it, so over a period of time, I did actually transition to propane.
Okay.
My first pizza, you know, you do not ever underestimate the learning curve. My first was more akin to a calzone than it was a pizza.
Really?
Well, launching it in, it, you know, I didn't have the proper semolina on the peel, and the thing flopped, and it was tasted good, but man, it was embarrassing. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, there were several false starts on that, but they were so good, and
right.
I very quickly, since that was Father's Day, which is what, June, we would have been leaving for our summer place a month afterwards, or 3 weeks afterwards. So I said, I got to have one of these. Am I going to take this with me? No, I'm going to order another one for up there. And that's turned out to be a wonderful social thing. We, you know, we'll have 8, 10, 12 people over, and I got a stainless steel cart with the wheels on it from Vivor,
yeah.
I think.
Yep.
Sure, it's not the greatest stainless steel in the world, but I keep it covered, and it's great. But in any case, it's one of these things that changes your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really does.
I believe it.
I've always been a kitchen guy. I used to joke that, you know, when real men watched football, I watched cooking shows.
Right.
Yeah. Back when cooking shows were educational and not strictly entertainment.
Right.
That said, I never did much of any baking. Now, you've been a baker, so, you know, you do your own bread and all that stuff, right?
All of it. Yeah. I cook too.
I had no clue as to the fact that, you know, most of this is done with percentage of hydration. And, you know, Patty and I went to a baking class at King Arthur Flour, which is an hour from here.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, in Vermont. And they emphasize that you weigh everything. You weigh your ingredients.
Yeah, you don't measure
by volume because, you know, you get a cup of flour. Well, what's a cup? Is it a compressed cup or a fluffy cup? And baking is so critical for that kind of thing. But in any case, so pizza dough is targeted at 65 to 68% hydration. What the hell's that? You know,
that's easy.
I know it is once you understand it. But in any case, so you take a kilo, 1,000 grams of pizza flour. I use bread flour too, but double zero
flour, right? Yeah.
So you've got a kilo is 1,000 grams. I do everything in grams too.
Yep.
Well, too. For 68% hydration, you want 680 grams
of water.
Of water.
Yeah.
Well, how do you convert that to milliliters?
You don't. You weigh don't. It.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
A gram and a milliliter are. That's the beauty of the metric system.
Right. It really is, especially when you're dealing with liquid. Same thing.
So for that thousand or that kilo of flour and 680 grams of water, you're going to put in 30 grams of sea salt and about 2 grams of the active yeast, the dried yeast. I haven't found fresh yeast around here yet. I'm sure the Natural Foods Co-op has it, but
you got to get some sourdough starter to really make.
Well,
that
you
work.
Could do that too. I haven't started the sourdough, and then they have what the hell are those other things? They're poolish,
which
is a pre-ferment, and a biga is a different pre-ferment.
Right.
So, but you can go down the YouTube rabbit holes on this thing, and sure, I bet I spent 100 hours on YouTube researching different pizza recipes and techniques, but it's the best. So last night we had a couple of people over for dinner, new friends. I had met her, but I had not met her husband.
Okay.
And one of the lessons here is that now Patty volunteers at the local library, and the library here is a room and a half at the back of our little town hall. Because the town I live in has about 1,200 people and 23 square miles.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not going to be a big metropolitan library, but by any stretch. But any case, so she would run into this woman that would come in to take books out. And this kind of Patty buys all the books for this library, which she loves to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so they got yapping a little bit. And so Patty decided, I'm going to put myself out there a little bit. Because as you get older, it's hard to meet friends.
Sure,
meet new people. So she said, you'd like to go out. Let's go get a coffee sometime. You know, which they did. And, you know, they continued the friendship. And so they came over last night. And we're here, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. I made three pizzas. Plus I had some extra dough. So I made a fourth one and gave it to him to take home to warm up. There
you go. Wow.
You know, which was cool.
Wow.
So what did I make? I made first one was just a little bit of tomato, the typical pepperoni.
Okay.
Okay. Which was, you know, was good. Second one I made was cheddar cheese, parboiled chopped broccoli, and some ricotta cheese.
Okay.
That was the second one.
No red sauce or red sauce?
No
red sauce.
No sauce. Olive oil. No sauce.
Okay.
Yeah. Cheese first, broccoli, and then the ricotta on top. It was good. Yeah. Then the third one was my Vermont special. That is cheddar cheese, bacon, sliced red onion, julienned apple.
Oh, my God.
And when it comes out, you drizzle maple syrup.
Oh, there you go. Jesus.
Oh, man. Yeah. I always eat that one last because it's almost like dessert. You could eat it for breakfast, too.
I was going to say, that would be the morning pizza. Yeah.
But, you know, it's been so much fun learning a new skill, if you will.
Yeah.
It's always a crapshoot because there are so many variables.
Right.
You know, because I'll make this dough and I'll put it in the fridge for 2 to 3 days.
Okay.
And then I take it out about 5 hours before I want to use it, and I ball it up and then let them sit out at room temperature, and, you know, they'll bloom from there. But you never get the same thing twice.
No, it's a living, breathing organism.
You know, it's whether it's ambient temperature, whether it's fermenting temperature, whether it's the humidity, whether it's the... In New York City, which is, you know, is reputed to have in some
places, circles,
you know, is reputed to have the best pizza in the world. And a lot of people say it's the tap water that is the difference. Now, I would hope there's not so much stuff in tap water that it would be enough to make a difference, but.
Oh, that's true. No, there's.
Maybe it is. But
beer brewers feel the same way. The water source is a big deal, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, you got different flour, you got different water, you've got this last batch, I put some olive oil in it, which is not acceptable to the purists of the
Neapolitan
crust, but
right, you don't do that.
Yeah. Most of the New York style pizza has olive oil in it, but it's just been a tremendous yeah. amount of fun, you know.
Well, and then it comes down to which olive oil you use, you know. Is it
old dog virgin? Learning new tricks.
It's really cool.
One last thing on my mind, we talked about mushroom coffee.
How's that going for you?
It's not.
What? No?
Well, I'm a man of principle.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, no.
No, but seriously. So I was about 2 weeks into it, everyday dose.
Right.
I liked it. Patty liked it.
Okay.
And I can't say I noticed any benefit or any effect whatsoever. Nothing positive, nothing negative.
Okay.
But so I hit the wall with this depressive episode that I had.
And yeah.
I took a step back and I said, thought to myself, well, I've been taking this stuff just about concurrent with this downslide of my mental state.
No way. That's what you're thinking?
I don't know. So if you read the promotional hype for this stuff, the guy who started the company,
yeah,
I was on Ritalin for 20 years for ADHD, and now doing this mushroom stuff, I don't have to do that anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So what does that say? That tells me that there's some sort of psychoactive ingredient.
Well, there's definitely a nootropic part of that. That's what the mushroom part is. Yeah.
Okay.
So if it was, I guess it could affect you negatively.
I don't know. And I'm not saying that it was. I was going to ask a question. So they have this Facebook group. And again, I don't like Facebook, but I said, all right, it's called Dose Fam because you're in the family now, baby.
Right.
So and it's moderated.
Okay.
So I go on there and I, and it's the typical stuff, bullshit that, you know, all these, they're mostly women, you know, that post. I mean, it's an observation.
No, but there tends to be some Karens in those groups and they tend to rule.
They'll post a picture of their morning cup with the froth. Oh, love, love, love my everyday dose, and what value is that? So I crafted a very nicely worded post, and I said, I'm wondering if anybody has experienced any negative, I don't know what word I used, psychological or whatever, any negative effects
right
from this. Please do not respond if you have no experience pertinent to my question.
With a negative thing. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want a whole lot of people blowing sunshine up, you know, all over the place.
Oh, you're wrong, Peter. It's really good. Yeah.
Got it. I said, I don't know. I'm merely asking whether anybody has experienced any negative effects. And they snagged it.
They moderated your post.
The censor snagged it because it could have, you know, inferred that there might be something that just wasn't, you know, all kinds of rainbows and sunshine and stuff. And I'm a man of principle.
Yes, you are.
So I said to myself, you know what? I canceled the rest of my subscription.
Wow, Peter.
I may go back at some point. But
there's a dozen different brands out there right now. You know?
It just pissed me off because Why do they have this Facebook group so everybody can just, isn't this great? No. But,
you know, that's the smoke and mirrors of those kind of things.
How do I best use my frother? And I don't go over that 175 degrees. No, it works best when it's cold. All this crap. I mean, come on. So I gave it the gate. I said, you're out of here.
Out.
Yeah. Out. Which is disappointing on one level to me.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed it. I still got some.
Yeah. Use it up. No, I don't know. Let Patty use it. I don't know. I mean, I get the nootropic thing and I understand I don't have that negative effect. I like it for me.
I'm not saying there was a negative effect.
No, I understand.
I was saying that it was coincidental.
Yeah.
That during this 2-week time period that I was using that, it also happened that at the beginning of that 2-week time frame, my dog died.
Yeah, exactly.
So it could have had and probably had nothing to do with it. But if, again, this guy is claiming that whatever, quasi-medicinal properties this thing may have helped him.
Oh, that's great.
Maybe it would work differently for somebody else. I don't know.
Well, it's funny because, I can liken this in so many ways to my turf grass journey, because things that worked for me that I knew were working on my golf course were also things that everybody said, well, that couldn't work, Dave. It doesn't work that way. That's anecdotal, Dave. There's no university research. There's no,
I love anecdotal.
I don't know. My greens are pretty freaking good right now. So you can laugh at me all you want. And those guys were laughing at me about granola management and, John Scott and all of them, asking me if I was spraying pine nuts this week or what was going on. And I'm just like, you guys can tease me all you want, but golf course is good.
Look at my greens.
Golf course is good and I'm not using any pesticides. So, you can say whatever you want to say, but yeah, that anecdotal thing, well, that might work for you at that one place. You're right. Isn't that kind of what I'm supposed to do, is figure out how things should work at this one place? That's my job.
Well, that's, circling back to the turf grass thing again, that's something that's always driven me crazy, in that a guy is managing his property.
Right.
And he finds something that works for him, whether it's a product or a strategy or a whatever it is, works for him. And this has driven me crazy that you get some of the pundits.
Yeah.
They have some letters behind their letters and dots behind their name.
Yep.
Poo-pooing that, saying, that's impossible, or that would not happen, or whatever. Well,
I'll give you a good example of that, Peter, is that we're talking about 1990 here, right? This is now a commonplace strategy in a lot of places. But I just sort of almost by accident skipped across the idea that we would top dress before we punched holes.
Yeah.
Right. And part of that was, to let top dressing sand dry, to pound it into the thing. I just thought, we'll try this.
Sure. Right.
And I tried it, worked really good. We didn't have any top dresser tracks. Just so many things were right about it. Plus I was starting to transition to solid tines and no hollowed tines. So there was all of that. Right. And when I told people about that, there is, you're an idiot, dude. A good friend of mine said, that's just the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Hell would you do that for? Now it's a commonplace technique, right? And the first time we used the Vertidrain, we top dressed and then Vertidrain in. And even the Vertidrain people were like, the Rexidem people were like, don't do that, Dave. Shouldn't do that, And my USGA agronomist, who I won't mention, hassled me on our visit when I told him how I did it. And I'm like, I don't know, greens are pretty good. I'd aerified enough greens at that point that I know what a good aerification day looked like. And this was good. Right. So, things have to evolve. whether they're researched at the university or not, right?
Well,
and part of that is innovation. And innovation shouldn't ever be looked down on. And yeah, I made some mistakes too. And we did some things that could have been.
That's how you learn. You don't make any mistakes. You're not trying. You're not stretching yourself enough.
Well, we tried hard not to take those mistakes to 18 greens. You know, I mean, you know, if I had anything that was and same deal, you know, before I didn't go out and say, well, we're going to here. It's aerification day. I'm going to top dress greens and hammer in the sand. You know, we went and tried it in some spots and see if that would work. We didn't just go to it, you know, right in front of the clubhouse. So I don't know. That's just me. You know, I always want people to try things and innovate. And my favorite turf grass managers over the years have always been the ones that haven't been afraid to try, you know, and I love that.
Like you said, you try on a small scale. I do a presentation. I've done quite a few times about, you know, surviving your career and talking about job killers and stuff like that. And one of the biggest ones is don't make the big mistake. Don't make the visible mistake. You're going to try something, go on the backside at 16 green or something and try something back there, but don't do it.
Yeah, no, you know, I always used to say, we'll swing at some high pitches at the batting practice, not at game night, you know?
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll play with it.
But it's good.
And then, you know, that keeps you from doing silly things. But, you know, you get run down, you get tired, you know, and then all of a sudden, oh, my God, you know, that was a gigantic thing. I shouldn't have done it, but didn't see it coming. So I've been there.
I have. We're going to ring the bell on this session of.
Nice, because I think the puppy's had about enough of this.
Yes, your puppy is awesome. I love the collar that you got on there. It's all color coordinated.
Yeah, he's got a little, he's got a little Scottish, you know.
A little tartan going on.
I don't know if this is going to, but it's black and white like him. And
you got to take him out to tinkle here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's about time to go out for right.
And all right, then Dave, listen, have yourself a wonderful Christmas.
Yeah.
Enjoy Merry Christmas.
You're going to post the post that you always post on Christmas, right?
Yes. Desiderata.
Yeah. Good.
Yes. That's a classic. Been doing that for 31 years now.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, go see Peter post that on TurfNet. I think you can see it, even if you're not a subscriber, yes, right? But you should be, but yeah.
I'll send it out on social media too.
There you go. Good.
All right, Dave.
Favorite thing. Thank you.
And Walter.
Merry Christmas to you guys.
Yes.
Thanks, guys, for listening and ringing the bell on 7. Crazy.
Yes. And everybody, hopefully, have a little relaxation. Put your feet up.
Yeah.
Enjoy your family.
Think about what's important. That's right.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding.
We'll catch you after Christmas.